Hey, John.
Hey, Nick.
What kind of, your hair's so soft. What kind of soap are you using these days?
Yeah, this is, I'm using some, this is a good American Crew.
It smells good, like too.
Yeah, thank you. It's, I appreciate that.
No, trust
yeah.
me. This is Phrenology. Trust me. Just trust me.
Okay, yeah. okay, Joe Biden. And this is Stranger Still.
Welcome to another wonderful episode of Stranger Still.
Oh, this is going to be a wonderful one?
Yeah, all the other ones are crap.
I'm glad we're categorizing them. Yeah. I'm John Began.
I'm Nick Wood. This today is going to be a super chill episode.
This today, yes sir.
Because for once, I'm not the only one that feels like crap.
Yeah.
You also feel like crap.
But I'm like a different level of sick.
Yeah.
Like in a positive way. Like I'm a vegan sick, mm-hmm. so it never gets that bad, yeah. you know? Like I've got that superhuman like immuno vegano like I won't go
like
into
you're
the
like
science
a pizza topping or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
John,
it sounds very Italian. No matter what I say,
you know, I could tell that you're Italian just by looking at the shape of your skull.
You could,
because I am a practitioner of phrenology.
Wow, dude,
that's right, John.
If I were to run my little phalanges over your skull head,
yeah,
I think I would know that you're good at segues.
You like that?
Yeah.
So, do you know what phrenology is? I know you know what phrenology is because I asked you before we started.
Yeah.
But just play coy for a second.
No.
Have you Have you seen Django Unchained?
Did you believe me?
Yeah, I believed you. It was really convincing.
I did see Django Unchained.
There's that really intense scene where Leonardo DiCaprio saws open one of his former slaves' head and shows three dimples, and he claims that that's what makes the slaves of the time submissive.
With the fight scene.
Yeah, the fight scene soon follows that. What he was talking about is a thing called phrenology.
Sounds terrible, Nick.
It is terrible. It started out humble. It started out okay, and then, like, many things where you can use it to say that you're better than someone else, it became very racist and sexist.
Mm.
So it's going to be a rip-roaring episode, John.
Just like, yep.
Are you ready to talk about phrenology?
I'm ready to get ripping and roaring like a log flume. I'm going to splash mountain this episode into my brain and remember it forever and then forget it forever.
Yeah, just like.
Actually, yeah. Let's
just like
it.
A log flume.
Yeah, I don't remember. Do you have a memorable log flume memory?
I mean, I do, but only because it was like the only log flume in Iowa at Adventureland, and then they took it down to make way for another roller coaster.
Because they're terrible and they jostle you around.
Yeah, they're not good. And then your socks are wet for the rest of the day. Who enjoys those?
Lumberjacks, Nick.
Oh, it brings them back to the homeland.
Mm-hmm. When they used to hollow out logs and go down waterfalls by their lonesome. So they wasted their time.
I bet if you felt lumberjacks' heads, you'd know that they love flannel.
Yeah, yep.
You like that segue? You're bringing us back.
Okay, we're back in.
So the basic idea of phrenology, for those that don't know, and just to get a little bit more specific, is the idea that you can look at someone's skull, living or dead, and you can tell what kind of person they are or what kind of person they were. And it popped up right at the end of the 1700s, and it was huge for like a good 100 years, and then quickly fell out of fashion for reasons that we'll get into. And the thought at the time, you got to remember, this was like the same era where we were just coming out of the four humors. Like, for a really long time, we thought that was a thing.
Yeah, what are the four humors again? Can you remind me of them? They're dry...
Wet. Well,
there's
wet classifications.
Humor.
I think two of them are wet, two of them are dry. There's
wet humor, very wet humor, dry.
Yeah, blood.
Blood?
Yeah, hang on.
Like, stand up?
Sit down. No, there's black bile, yellow bile,
red bile,
phlegm,
and Adam
blood.
Sandler. The four humors. We don't really like I'd go with the phlegm over the rest, but.
Yeah. That's the tastiest of them all, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. I just grossed myself out saying that. So this was around, like, we had just stopped using the four humors. We had just figured out vaccines, and the world was just figuring out how bodies worked. And so
there's time to goof it up.
Well, there's plenty of stumbles along the way. The thought, specifically with phrenology, was that your brain was broken up into a bunch of different regions, which sounds right. That's how we know today. We have like the frontal lobe, the occipital lobe, the cerebral cortex, the hippocampus. You got all these parts of your brain.
Yeah, different counties.
Yeah, and they have different zip codes. Mm-hmm. It says on their license plate, that's where you know where they're from. But with phrenology, the idea was that there one region of your brain could be bigger or smaller than others. And by figuring out which ones were bigger or smaller, you could figure out the personality of someone. You could figure out if they're smart or kind or if they're a murderer or a burglar or something like that. And it became a huge profession where you could go and get your skull read and figure out like what kind of line of work or you were supposed to go into or what your strengths were in life. A lot like a horoscope reading or something like mm-hmm. that, or tarot card reading. And he was a physician named Franz Joseph Gall, came along with a perceived deeper understanding of how the mind worked, and people were just gobbling it up.
Wow, dude, he must have made a lot of Franz.
It's better than an enema. So like I said, Mr. Gall was a physician. He lived in Germany, and he lived from 1758 to 1828. And after studying the human brain compared to animal brains, he noticed that the cerebral cortex in humans was much larger than it is in animals. And I don't think he knew this at the time, but there's a lot of parts of the brain that make us human, but the cerebral cortex certainly has a huge influence over what...
Yeah, it adds a bunch of RAM, basically.
Yeah. I mean, you're not wrong.
I know.
It gives us consciousness, thought, language, and reasoning. So when it comes to what separates humans from animals, that's a pretty big piece of the puzzle.
Yeah.
So he took this concept and reversed it and said, so if it's, I mean, he didn't exactly do this, but it's the principle is that if it's smaller in person, they must be closer to an animal. And then he took that a step further and said, there must be other areas of the brain responsible for things like cleverness or wit or poetic talent or murderous intent, you know, the usual stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So murderous intent.
So if the area of the brain for wit was bigger or swollen, they'd be a lot funnier. But if the area for cleverness was smaller or sunken in, they're not going to be as smart of a person. The other understanding at the time was that the skull fit the brain like a glove. So as one area of the brain started to grow and swell, the skull would contour to that almost exactly.
So you should just cut it off and be a bunch of megamines?
Yeah. We let the brain grow.
Gross.
That is gross. So after someone died, you could inspect the imprints inside their skull, or you could just feel the tops of people's heads to learn more about them while they're alive. So in 1796, Gall's phrenology hit the scene with 4 to 5 main tenets, depending on how you group these together. The first one was that the brain is an organ of the mind. So the mind is a separate entity of the brain, and the mind controls the brain, much like, I don't know, our brain controls our lungs.
Do you think the mind was just electrical impulses or something?
Even that far yet. Get into that. Actually, that does pop up a little later on. The second piece of this is that the mind is composed of multiple distinct innate faculties. So it started out with 27 areas of the brain that he had, and it got all the way up to like 35 at one point. They just kept adding them and moving them around and stuff. Number three was that because they are distinct, each faculty must have a separate seat or organ in the brain. So much like our body is made up of a bunch of different organs, he thought the brain was made up of a bunch of different organs. So instead of like kidneys and pancreas and all that stuff, it was like
fun wrinkles to put together like a puzzle.
Yeah. Yeah. A very gelatinous jigsaw puzzle.
Anyway, dude.
But this is just a really gross episode, isn't it? So number four is the size of an organ.
Imagine making a puzzle out of Jello.
That'd be really hard.
I hate it.
That's the end of my sentence.
Yeah.
I couldn't think
of it. No, I just wanted... There's nothing funny to say about it. I just want everybody to think about it.
Now it's in everyone's brain.
But I guess if you smash it together, it's not a big deal.
Like, stir it with a spoon and it's all...
Yeah. I made a red circle. That was what was on the box.
So number four is the size of an organ, other things being equal, is a measure of its power. So like I said, if it's bigger, then it's more powerful. The shape of the brain is determined by the development of various organs. So as one area of the brain gets bigger, the brain being that organ gets bigger. And then six is as the skull takes its shape from the brain, the surface of the skull can be read as an accurate index of psychological aptitudes and tendencies.
Wow, dude, just because you use nice words doesn't mean you're correct scientifically.
Skull? It's a pretty nice word.
Oh, wow.
Oh, you mean like aptitudes?
The fact that he's putting so much effort into this garbage. Yeah.
Actually, if you read the original letter that he wrote regarding these, it's a lot more poetic than that, because he was pretty full of himself, I think. As we get into this, you mm-hmm. might agree.
I'm full of myself, too. My whole body is me. It's made of me.
Right. Mm-hmm. The John organ of your brain is just the entire size of your body.
Yeah.
Yeah, gotcha. So if you trace the history of phrenology throughout the world, it's all over the place. So it stayed in Germany for a while until about like 1815, when this review critiquing phrenology was written in Edinburgh Review.
Mm.
I definitely didn't say that wrong, but I tried. Like
it's not, yeah, it sounded fancy.
So then Gall came in defending it and then won over a bunch of people in England. So it became popular there, started to lose fashion in Germany somewhere around there. And then in the 1830s to 40s, it spread from Britain to France and America. And then in the 40s, it was reintroduced into Germany, and then it stayed in Britain until the 50s when it started to fade away. But then in the 60s, the Americans brought it back to Britain. So all I'm trying to illustrate is that it was this huge fad, and it just kept coming back.
Was there any mutual discovery in other countries and cultures?
Yeah, so some of the countries would adopt it into their own. So when you like look into it, you'll find like different names associated with...
I'm sorry, did you say look into it? That's your job.
Well, yeah.
But I'm not going to do that.
So, like, there's Fowler's phrenology and stuff like that, or a lot of times they say, like, American-influenced phrenology, that kind of stuff. Like I said, different areas of the brain were being added on all the time because people were just making it up as they went, and then they would move the mappings around. We'll get into that because that's kind of funny to me.
Speaking of, when we do switch to a visual thing, just as a little note right here for everybody to remember, a little asterisk.
In the visual part of your brain.
We got to get all kinds of that stuff as decor in here. We got to get phrenology, graphs, and horoscopes, and Ouija boards.
Yeah, well, let's get into it, because Gall assigned the 27 different areas of the brain with different traits. They were, and bear with me, this is a long list. Obviously it's 27. So, in no particular order, I think this is from Encyclopedia Britannica of all places. When was the last time you used
that? Not to be confused with Encyclopedia Britannica.
Yeah. Thanks for calling me out. So the first one is reproductive instincts. The second one is the love of one's offspring, affection and friendship, self-defense, courage and fighting, murderous instincts, acuteness and cleverness, sense of property, the tendency to steal, pride, arrogance, haughtiness, love of authority and loftiness. That's a lot to cram into one bullet point. Vanity, ambition, love of glory.
Wow.
circumspection or forethought. Aptitude for being educated, which I guess is just a fancy way of saying
intelligence.
They can learn. Sense of locality and place, like sense of direction, recollection of people, verbal memory, language ability, the sense of colors, sense for sound and musical talent, mathematical abilities, mechanical abilities, comparative sagacity, oh my god.
Yikes, I guess your ability to speak organs not so doing so great.
Comparative sagacity, metaphysics, satire and wit, which apparently yours is on point today, poetic talent, kindness, compassion, sensitivity, and moral sense, imitation and mimicry, religiosity, perseverance, and firmness. Those were the one bullet point, those last two.
Yeah.
So over time, I've said this like twice already, but I was kind of curious as to how he assigned the areas of the brain. And the answer is very frustrating to me, because in the beginning, he would just pick a trait and assign it an arbitrary point in the brain. And he would just say, that's religiosity.
Yeah, that's how everything works, Nick.
Yeah.
Most of the time.
Not usually, because...
If you're not a scientist and you're doing science...
You think you're doing science.
And you're not using the scientific method, that's
how it
gets
worse when it comes to the scientific method. So he'd pick a trait, assign it a part of the brain, and then he'd gather his friends or people that he perceived to have that trait. So if he's like, this is the area of the brain that's wit, so I'm going to get a bunch of funny people in a room.
He would
look in the area for the trait and just feel around for bumps on their head. And at first, I was like, oh, so if he didn't find a bump there, he would probably gather that data and then reevaluate where it went, right? No, he would just...
I guess you're not funny.
Well, no, he'd be like, either... There's another organ at work here that is making you funny but isn't specifically the funny organ. Or he'd just throw it out altogether. So if he found contradictory evidence, he would just toss it out.
Right. Well, it's not his fault. It was like 5 years before the funny bone was discovered.
I know. That's where he should have been looking this whole time. So Early on, he also inspected a lot of patients at insane asylums and found a bump just above their ears that he thought was responsible for criminal activity.
And they were probably called insane asylums back then.
They were, yes. I guess I shouldn't have called it that, but that's what what they were called. So I guess over time, as people started making more discoveries, quote unquote, in phrenology, they would move the mappings around. So you could have a map, a drawing of the map that Gall had assigned or a different phrenologist had assigned. Gall kind of died early into the age of phrenology. He died in 1828, and it was introduced in 1796, and it went until like 1850s and 60s. So a lot of people picked up the reins after him. So a lot of people had different drawings. A lot of them kept human skulls around to study, like multiple just empty skulls. Some of them had sculptures of the skulls with the mappings on, like, the outside, so you could, like, look at it on a statue. That's what I want here.
That's dope.
When we get our visual format. So when it comes to... well, there's a lot of people that were interested in phrenology. There were practicing phrenologists, of course, people trying to make money off of this. So there's some would offer services, like I said, like a tarot reading or horoscope reading. People would come in and the practitioners would just run their fingertips over your head to give you the phrenology readings. Gall said that you should use the palms of your hands, which, like, that seems way too cumbersome for me.
Oh, yeah.
Some practitioners use, like, calipers to get exact measurements of different areas of your head. And then, again, just like a horoscope reading, they would come back and tell you about your personality.
Calipers are those little things that kind of look like a compass, right? That you make a circle with on paper.
Yeah, like, go in and out. You get, like, you take the measurement and you take it back to a ruler and see what the measurement was.
I didn't mean to use the word compass. What's the little swirly circle
protractor?
Maker? Thank you.
That one? Yeah. Well, that's also called a compass.
What?
You're good?
Okay.
Yeah. You're in the clear on this one. This is just this one.
Oof. I'm glad that.
One per episode. And they don't carry over. Yeah. So. For all those people playing along at home. There are also religious people interested in phrenology for widely different reasons. Some of them were appalled by Gall's assignment of a religiosity center of the brain, thinking that that was atheistic. Other people saw it as the complexity of phrenology as proof of a smart design or God, if you will. And then lastly, there are people that used it to lord over other people. And this is where it starts to get very dicey. So best case scenario, people used it to prove that they were smarter than other people, and that's how it started out. They'd just be like, I'm an intellectual, haha, you're just a stupid.
My cerebral cortex is swollen.
Yes.
I'm very smart.
I do say. So eventually, quote-unquote radicals, as one article put it, started to show up, and they started using phrenology to bring about social and political change. And I guess either by saying these people are better, they're more suited to be leaders, or, more dangerously, these people are inferior, and we should treat them as inferior. Do you see where this is going, John?
Yeah.
So it very, very quickly became the tool of racists and sexists. So men could be like, well... You know, women, I'm just going to pick a random trait so that I don't make myself sound like an idiot. Their recollection of people center of their brain is very sunken. And that's why when I come home, my wife has no idea who I am.
Yeah.
All women are like that, John. Did you know that?
Wow. I can't wait to get this out of context and make a YouTube video.
But like in Django Unchained, that's a movie, of course, but that was in line with the thinking back then, especially before the Civil War. If you'll remember in that scene, Leonardo DiCaprio takes the skull of one of the slaves that was on his plantation for generations, and he tells this story about how every Sunday or something, he would give his dad a shave, and he had the opportunity to, like, slit his throat, and it wouldn't have taken him no 50 years either. He cuts open the skull and shows these three dimples on the back of the skull, and says if these three dimples were in the mind of an Isaac Newton or an Einstein wasn't around by then, but an Isaac Newton, you'd find these three dimples in the smart area of their brain. But here, this is the center of submissiveness. So that's why we are allowed to lord over African Americans. Good job, fake Leonardo DiCaprio. What was his name in that movie? Candyman? It was Candyman. What?
Something like that. I love that movie. I don't know why. I can't remember his name.
I know. It's a good movie. Actually, in the movie, it says that African Americans are more submissive than any other species on Earth. Good job, racists.
Yeah.
Luckily, it fell out of fashion very quickly. There's a few things that happened. Namely, in 1843, Pierre Flourens proved that the skull didn't contour to the brain like a glove, like people thought it did. Rather, the skull was relatively like a smooth shape with no regard for the shape of the brain. And it seems weird that it took that long to prove, because you could just like crack it open and see that like it's not filling in the grooves of your brain. It's not.
Yeah, you got brain juice in there.
Yeah.
Whatever. Do you know that you got lots of juices, Nick?
There are lots of juices. I know that.
Are we going to go over body juices? Well, do you ever think, like, I used to have this thing. We're going to take a little detour real quick. This is my little corner.
Yeah, John's corner.
Thanks.
You sit over there.
The heart, the human heart.
Yeah.
I was always like, how does everything just kind of, like, slide up against each other? You know, we have, like, a human Ziploc bag that we keep that sucker in?
Yeah.
It's like a little, like, loosey-goosey, little lubed up, little Ziploc. I think we got that on a lot of organs. There's just little protective coverings.
Yeah, they just discovered that, didn't they?
No. Well, that's a different organ that we found. But we have a lot of, little, like, juices in there. So we got, like, fluids, spinal fluid, brain fluid.
You find a way to make it stranger, and I'll find a way to make it still.
Deal.
Also around this time, there's incidents like Phineas Gage, where it helped us develop our understanding of the brain and different brain functions.
Now, how do you feel about Phineas and Ferb's head shapes?
Oh, God. They are concerning.
Yeah.
There was writings by John Hewlings Jackson in 1864, where he wrote about the loss of speech after a brain injury. And then in 1875, the first recorded electrical activity.
John Hewlings Jackson sounds like John the Baptist nickname.
But anyway, in 1875, the first recorded electrical activity in the brain was recorded, which was a very redundant sentence, but I'm sick, lay off me, which eventually led to stuff like the MRI, like 100 years later. A bunch of studies were being done on blind people at the time, like their dreams and their other senses and stuff. And in 1879, they figured out which area of the brain correlates to the eyes. So I went through like a whole neuroscience timeline, and there's a lot. I just picked a couple developments from around the time that this was taking a decline, and just I'm trying to paint the picture of what debunked phrenology. But the main nail in the coffin, I think, was Pierre Florin's discovery of the skull just being like a random shape. It's nothing to do with the shape of your brain. And then, of course, better scientific rigor came into fashion, too, which was a huge part of dethroning phrenology. As soon as people realized that he was just, like, tossing out contrary evidence, they're like, okay, this is BS.
Yeah.
So real science came to save the day, John.
I wish it would happen more often.
Yeah, like, I don't know, climate change, vaccines, just to name. I'm just random.
No, I hear you. Examples. I posted something about climate change the other day, and someone said, it's been happening for hundreds of years. And I'm like, oh, little straggler. I didn't remove you yet from my friends list.
Yeah, I had to deal with a coworker talking about climate change the other day. I don't want to talk about that. Should we talk about...
I do. Modern we will eventually.
Studies? Yeah, we can talk about climate change one day. But one thing that we can give credit to phrenology is the eventual development of neuroscience. This was like the earliest form of anyone looking into neuroscience, and people started digging in to figure out what the brain really did. And I mean, eventually, he wasn't that far off. We have different areas of the brain that correlate to different like memory or speech or different senses or pain, like everything.
Yeah, that's how a lot of this stuff gets dangerous. So if you think about any of it, because even when we did our horoscope readings and stuff, there was like, oh wow, you could like kind of piece together if there's a nugget of truth in something.
Yeah,
it's so easy to expand into fantasy.
But all of that stuff has scientific rigor behind it, whereas phrenology did not. We also have better tools these days, like MRI and stuff like that. There was this article that just came out in 2018 where people picked phrenology back up. There was some people at Oxford that, as they put it, in the spirit of scientific fun, they wanted to figure out if there's any truth to phrenology, like 100 years after it fell out of fashion.
I think if it starts with that sentence, I give them a pass.
in the spirit of scientific fun.
Yeah.
They hooked up 6,000 people to an MRI, mapped out their brains and skulls to see if it lined up to any of the phrenological findings from the time. So when it comes to the brain, there was a little bit of a surprise to me. They found that the brain of musically talented people lined up to some of the phrenology mappings. and people who had the aptness to receive an education lined up as well. Those two areas of the brain, it wasn't too far off. However, they found no correlation between the curvature of the brain and the contouring of the skull. So even though there were, you could look at the brain and say, oh, this person might be musically talented.
You gotta crack that skull open.
While the brain is still pumping blood.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can't just look at the brain inside or out and figure out whether or not they're musically talented. So just in case there was any doubt, science went ahead and just tapped that final nail right into that coffin 100 years later. So, you want to recap phrenology for me while I take a drink of water to soothe my throat?
Yeah, you drink that water, dude. If you're going to want to find out if somebody's got musical talent, it's real. It's proven by science, but you have to cut their skull open first.
Yeah, and don't kill them at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
After the break, I do want to talk about some of the dangers of what I'll call phrenology-adjacent things going on in the world.
Oh,
today.
And that's... I mean... Let me just add a little asterisk, like that was a joke, like maybe it's not real, but it has some truth into it.
Well, we're going to talk about, there's some concerns in the LGBTQ plus community when it comes to phrenology, believe it or not, in today's world. So I want to address that after the break. Oh, man. John, next week, hopefully, we'll both feel better. But until then, where can people find us?
Where you just did, on StrangerSoulShow.com, or you're a podcast player.
Yeah, you can also go to facebook.com/group/strangerstill, and we hold monthly polls to see what you guys want to talk about.
And you really should, because we got a decent amount of downloads. I know you don't like to look at our stats sometimes because you're a statistician.
Yeah.
But we get a lot of listens sometimes, and I don't see a lot of people in the group, so I want you in there.
Yeah, get in there and interact. We're a bunch of nice people most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I have to say about that. And if you like our show, I know you might be driving right now, or you might be away from a computer where you could do this, but if you like our show and you've been listening for a while, maybe you can contribute to our Patreon.
Mm-hmm.
We're a part of the Flying Machine Network, which is full of other wonderful shows. If you go to patreon.com/flyingmachine, you can kick a few bucks our way, and we can get better equipment and do visual stuff and expand the network even more.
Man, you just always are looking for people to literally kick a few bucks. I mean, at this point, you better have cleats. And then we'll even get some shin guards, maybe.
Yeah, hey, coming up in the world.
You gotta have goals.
Hey, we gotta get goals too, get it? Also, if you go to flyingmachine.network, you can explore some of those other great shows. Maybe you haven't had a chance to listen to them. Just yesterday, I was listening to Falling in Love Montage, and they covered Muriel's Wedding, which is a movie I had never heard of and obviously never seen. But I learned from their episode that if it weren't for that movie, there's a very good chance we wouldn't have the musical Mamma Mia, and my love for ABBA would not be what it is today.
Wow,
so,
man.
Thanks, Muriel's Wedding.
A victory for disco.
And thank you, film Falling in Love Montage, for teaching me that. John, let's talk about some dangers in the world.
That's all we ever do. Yeah. Everything's terrible.
You gave me this look like, haven't we just been? So I came across this article written by someone within the LGBTQ community. I didn't know which letter of it they were. But they were concerned of scientists lately hooking people up to MRIs and trying to figure out if a trans person's brain is different than a cis person's brain, which is concerning to say the least. In these findings, they found, I guess the example in this article was a trans woman and a cis woman. Their brain activities were exactly the same. So with the intent of going in to figure out if you can look at a brain and figure out if it's a trans person's brain or not, sounds a lot like phrenology to me.
Yeah.
And while that doesn't necessarily sound dangerous, like on its surface, like, hey, can we look at the brain and figure out if a person's straight or if they are not? That doesn't sound bad to me, but I guess it kind of does, because
it immediately comes with loaded
intentions, right?
It's the same thing as what phrenology started at. It's a dangerous, it's like a first step towards a horrible path that could go down.
Yeah.
If it was used for good, I don't know what the implications would be. I couldn't see how.
I can see this quickly becoming very bad, especially if you like, in the world that we live in today, members of the LGBTQ community aren't treated as well as straight people. Let's just say it like it is. And that's why people are out there fighting for LGBTQ plus rights. And if you say, hey, you have the brain of a that matches that of a trans person, that might send them into the world of people not treating LGBTQ plus people the same. Mm-hmm. And now they have to be faced with that very early on in their life. I guess that's where my main concern comes in on this.
Yeah.
is that until we get equal rights for everyone on this planet, don't try going into their brain and seeing if you can identify who they are.
Well stated.
You
know? Yep. The only thing that I could think of that could ever come from something like this, and again, it would have to be treated. It all comes down to individualized medicine, though.
Yeah.
So, like,
as long as
you figure out someone's brain chemistry for them as a person, regardless of what they identify as, I think that's the most helpful thing that they should focus on.
The helpful thing for me is out of this article when they prove that a trans woman has the same brain activity as a cis woman. Why aren't they equals at that point?
You could spin that's where it should be used to the
benefit, but will it be? Absolutely not, because there's a bunch of idiots out there that don't think other humans should be treated like humans. So stop it,
because they're scared and self-conscious.
John, that's the whole point of our show, is treat people like people, damn it.
Yeah, unless they're flat earthers. I'm still John.
Jettison them into space. I'm still Nick,
and this is Stranger Still.
I give you the incredible flying machine.